children are the top priority in this country.
And can you talk about how communities of color are particularly impacted on the front lines of in their proximity, for example, to coal-fired plants?
You know, over a million African Americans live within 1 mile of an oil and gas operation. And a lot of people don't recognize that fence line and front line communities are the first people who are impacted by any change in regulation. So when we talk about the rollback of MATS, the mercury and air toxic standards, and the fact that the simplest thing that we all should make sure of is that we're not putting poison in the air that impacts unborn babies, that impacts children. And when that's done, the first place it gets to are those fence line and those frontline communities of color. Those are the people that are impacted first. And so to see this administration even moving in the direction of not only impacting unborn babies, their brains, because that's what mercury does, but then it is to the communities of color. Again, it is unimaginable that we're even still considering having Andrew Wheeler as the nominee when he has so evidently shown his disregard for communities of color and for young children. So as you can tell, I'm very passionate about this. But I think it's also important for us to know that our moms are working, that we know that there are activists that are out here that are not sitting quietly
Heather
by.
Heather McTeer, Tony, we're going to have to leave it there. National Field Director for Moms Clean Air Force and Marianne Hitt, Director of the Sierra Club's Beyond Coal campaign. That does it for our broadcast. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
It's 8 o'clock. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up in about 3 minutes, Voices from the Edge guest host Linda Olson-Osterlin talks to Andy Worthington, journalist, filmmaker, and author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison. Next.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Judge Torres, running January 10th to 19th at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Judge Torres is a modern-day fairy tale rooted in Salvadoran folklore. Xiomara Torres faces many obstacles in her turbulent journey crossing the border, maneuvering the U.S. foster care system, missing her family, aging out, and becoming the most recent Latinx judge in Multnomah County, Oregon. This is her story. Again, that's Judge Torres, running January 10th through 19th, weekly on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 p.m., and Sunday at 2 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio this morning and to Voices from the Edge. As much of you in the audience know, this is Joanne Hardesty's normal show slot, and she will be back to this after we've worked out some legalities, made sure everything's cool with the FTC and also with laws regarding her being a member of the city council, and I believe we'll have her back starting on January 31st. And today you've got me, and I am really happy to be here substituting for her. I have a guest that I wanted to bring for you. His name is Andy Worthington. He is the author of The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 men detained in America's illegal prisons. He's also a lot more than just that. He's a journalist. journalist, activist, a photographer, a filmmaker, a singer, and songwriter. I hope we'll be going out with one of his songs at the end of our show today. It's called Fighting Injustice, and we listened to it a little earlier here in the studio, I and our engineer, and we like that one, so we're going to try to go out with that today. He's a dedicated activist around Guantanamo to telling the stories of the men in Guantanamo and joining with others around the world to fight for their freedom. This has been going on for 17 years now, and that's what brought him to the United States at this time. And so, Andy Worthington, welcome to KBOO again.
Yeah, hello, Linda. Obviously, it's always lovely to speak to you. I'm not normally on this side of the Atlantic when that's happening. So.
I know. It's a little odd having you on
but
this
side. We're still thousands of miles away from each other, aren't we?
Yes, we are. Just, but not in our hearts, right? Not in our thinking.
No, definitely not.
Yeah. So you've been very busy since you arrived in the country. You've been doing a lot of events. Can you talk a little bit about the events that have been surrounding this, the 17th anniversary of the opening of Guantanamo? And I know for many people, Guantanamo slips way into the background with so many in-our-face problems all the time now. Every time our president tweets, we get a new problem.
Yes, and
they're serious ones. They're dangerous ones for our planet. But that doesn't mean we need to forget about Guantanamo. I did notice that the majority of articles I could find under news under Guantanamo were written by Carol Rosenberg of the Miami Herald, and I really recommend that you go to the Miami Herald, and even if you don't remember her name, Carol Rosenberg, just start putting in Guantanamo, because you'll find extensive coverage you won't find in other national outlets or other ways to find it. And so for those of us who want to keep up, she's doing a outstanding job of continuing with that.
Absolutely. It was the 17th anniversary last Friday, January the 11th. I've been coming here, this is my 9th January the 11th over here for events on and around the anniversary. I have to say that it was quite encouraging this year compared to the feeling last year. Last year, I honestly think people were feeling just crushed by the first year of Donald Trump's presidency. And this year there was a real energy, there was a real spirit of resistance. And I think part of that is a testament to the kind of people that are involved in this campaign who are not going to be crushed by Donald Trump. And I think the other thing for people, more thinking in terms of the political world in America, is the slim glimmer of hope that was offered by the Democrats taking the House of Representatives in the midterm elections. Now, I wouldn't want to overplay the role the Democrats can play, because I'm sure everyone remembers that we had a Democratic president for 8 years who said he would close Guantanamo when he took office and left 8 years later having failed to do so. But the fact is that under Trump, it was simply impossible to get anywhere with Guantanamo when the Congress was Republican-controlled, and the Republican Party, as it stands at the moment, is further to the right than it's ever been, opportunistically maybe, rallying behind Donald Trump. But there was just no chink of light at all, no possibility of talking to anyone, nothing really. So what we have on the anniversary, what I've been doing almost every year is a panel discussion at the New America think tank. I do that with, we have a guest, myself and Tom Wilner are always part of it. And Tom argued the Guantanamo prisoners cases before the Supreme Court in 2004 and 2008, the cases that secured them habeas corpus rights, which unfortunately the Court of Appeals then took away from them. But that's kind of a separate matter. But we always have these events, last year it was fairly empty and gloomy, and this year the place was packed out. So, wow. And C-SPAN came down and broadcast it.
So we can get it on C-SPAN if we want to see it.
Yeah, I mean, it's C-SPAN, it's available, or it's on the New America website. But yeah, I mean, I think it's quite readily.
What's the other website?
Available.
The New America?
New America. It's called New America. It used to be called the New America Foundation.
Okay, great. I'll remember that.
We have a vigil outside the White House with, you know, representatives of numerous groups, so Amnesty International USA, Center for Constitutional Rights, Witness Against Torture, which is a group of mainly religious campaigners who go on a fast for many days up to and including the anniversary and conduct actions around Washington, D.C. to highlight what's going on. They're quite an extraordinary bunch of people. And again, the vigil was, you know, there was real energy there.
So that's exciting. I think it reflects, you know, I think the crack in the Congress was part of it. Some people are getting more enthusiastic, but I think the less enfranchised of us out here are getting more active and taking bigger stands and feeling the urgency of climate change and
Absolutely.
How war is affecting that, and, you know, especially the wave of more right-wing issues that are coming across, well, your country and our country and many other countries right
yeah.
now. And so everything's got people afraid, but it's also got young people, you know, jumping in and older people coming back in. I noticed there was a press release from this Witness Against Torture activist and a statement from them. They were arrested in Senator Mitch McConnell's office where
yeah.
they did a sit-in. But before that, they also went around and did, you know, traditional type of lobbying, and they felt a bit good about the responses they were getting in Congress and from Congress about the lobbying. So they went into McConnell's office, and they sat there, I think, for several hours before they were arrested.
That's right, yeah. You know, and I think the...
And they were in orange uniforms, prison uniforms, I think.
That's right. But I think the approaches that were made to some of the representatives, you know, they'll be followed up on, and I think that that's, you know, and obviously a sensible way forward. I mean, you know, someone involved in the anniversary this year had worked out that the House committees are, you know, the membership of those, the leadership of those is changing, so this was a good time to get in there. And I think, you know, I think to the extent that, you know, you meet people's advisors and they nod politely and, you know, and it may seem like it's not going to go anywhere, I think it is worth pursuing because in terms of government, the only way that we could see any resolution to the Guantanamo issue eventually would be that Trump goes, the Republicans go, and we have a Democratic government in which certain people take it upon themselves to make a point of finally getting rid of the place. You know,
yeah.
It may or may not happen, Linda. I mean, the
obviously, I think the Nancy Pelosi wing of the Democratic Party is definitely got the strength right now in that Congress, and she is not someone who I don't think she would move to get Guantanamo opened and resolution of all those things. I think she is, I would call her a warmonger. And,
right.
and I believe that she's happy to have Trump stay in until the election, hoping to scare us all into voting for whoever the DNC's latest candidate is. They really
yes,
do
exactly.
hope to do that.
And,
and I think the new people...
Situation.
I think the new people in Congress are going to try to not put up with that, and at least the one Ocasio-Cortez has been tweeting up a storm of her own, and it's a lot more interesting tweeting than what we're getting from the president. I think
yeah,
that kind of thing is needed, and I think she's kind of playing the lightning rod right now and may go on to play that to keep rallying the... you know, the left, and, you know, her challenge that we should have the very wealthy have a 70% tax. I
right.
think that's exciting, and I think that they're the kind that those are the kind of people who would be the most help for us in getting Guantanamo closed and in understanding the real issues surrounding it. I want to talk about the men that are still there, but first I want to make sure the audience knows, our listeners, that this is a call-in show. I'm going to open the phone lines in about 5 minutes, so you can queue up if you'd like to. That phone number is 503-231-8187. That's the way to get on the airline, and we'll be opening those phone lines for those who call in about 5 more minutes. I was noticing before we get into who the men were, I wanted to say a couple other things about while this under Trump is going on, some interesting revelations are coming out, like that Gina Haskell, our CIA director, also known as a Bloody Mary for her enjoyment of torture. That's what former CIA agents called her. She apparently, this got slipped out. I love this when the government makes these kind of mistakes, and they do it every once in a while. The government, you know, in something that was supposed to be hidden and redacted, let out that she had been the chief person in charge of a black site on Guantanamo. We'd previously never heard of this black site. We don't know who was in it, and we don't know what was done to them. We do know that a lot of CIA prisoners were removed when the courts ruled that attorneys would actually be able to get in and speak to the prisoners there. So I find it really interesting that she, you know, she comes to the news that way. I'm hoping there are people who are going to pursue trying to find out what really happened under her leadership there in that black site.
Yeah, no, I think there's bound to be more. I mean, we actually do know some of the people who were held there, some of the high-value detainees who later came back in September 2006 were held there. You know, it's interesting the way they've tried to portray her, that, you know, when she spent some time running the black site in Thailand, the first CIA, post-9/11 CIA black site, you know, the narrative is that bad things happened there, but none of them under her watch. As though, you know, whenever she was in charge of a torture prison, that torture wasn't actually happening, which is just ridiculous.
Yes. And they don't send you to the black site if they don't expect you to participate.
The most unfortunate thing about her is that, you know, she was nominated and approved for the role of director of the CIA. So yes. The trend towards, you know, towards moving beyond torture that was clearly established in the Senate Intelligence Committee's torture report, which was so damning about what had happened, you know, the outcome of that, the last thing that should have happened was that an actual torturer was running the CIA. But that's what we've got. So I really do hope that people are going to dig and find out
more about what she was really involved with. And then this current nominee for Attorney General, there's much to say bad about him here in the U.S., but it turns out that he was in charge of running a camp of 300 Haitian immigrants who have been fleeing violence in 1991, and it was a maximum security facility that they put these people in on Guantanamo, and
right. It
was because they had HIV, and it included children. It wasn't that they were criminals. They were held there for over 2 years. It took courts. I think the judge in one of the courses said it was the disturbing conditions were, no, the callous lack of sensitivity to human suffering and fundamental human rights was shocking.
Yeah, I didn't know about that. This was the guy who's the nomination.
Yeah. Maggot-infested food, inadequate medical care, no access to immigration attorneys, et cetera. And it took a judge overruling it. The judge likened the situation to a concentration camp and declared the Haitians were there, quote, solely because they are Haitian and have tested positive for HIV, end quote.
No, a terrible precedent.
So
for,
this,
you
is,
know,
this is this
what,
is this is the Attorney
happened
General.
Later at Guantanamo? I mean, really.
Oh, I just got a note. I want to thank you. I just got an updated note when I talked earlier about when Joan Hardesty will be back. It's January 24th next week, so that's exciting. You don't know anything about her, Andy, but she's a long-term host here at KBOO on Thursday morning talk show. She's also a long-term African-American activist in the community. She's been a representative in the state legislature. She's been a strong and consistent voice for police accountability, and she just got elected to our city council. So while she was running, she couldn't be on the radio, so her show was empty for a time, but we're getting her back and very excited about it. I consider her part of that wave of, you know, the elections that happened in November, where you're really getting some change coming into places. She makes a strong 3-2 in the city council on important issues. So we're pretty glad to have that. And so there is excitement about the potential for change. And yet, who's being put in office, and they're not removed yet, are people who are very, very dangerous. I don't think there's any question. These people are dangerous to basic human rights for all people.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen some terrible things happening in the last year, shifting the Supreme Court permanently to the right for decades with the appointment of Kavanaugh, which should, you know, again, should just not have happened.
Oh, it was nauseating. I was glued to the testimony. I was listening on radio, on my computer, and on TV. at the same time. And he was, as soon as he started that angry bluster, I knew he was an alcoholic. Everyone's going, anybody who knows any alcoholics goes, oh yeah, there's the drunk who's pretending he's not. I like my beer, he says over and over again. But more is the danger that he presents to women and our whole society in terms of his outlook about the presidency and the powers of the presidency.
Well, exactly, and he's then, looked through his history, and there he is defending Guantanamo on numerous, noticeable occasions.
Yes, and what all of the people, the defenders of Guantanamo, forget is that we have learned that over 97% of them were not dangerous to America. A few of those might have been grunt-level soldiers. They were not terrorists. They were not big-level soldiers. And
well, there were only 40 men held, Linda, and some of those men are only there not because it's claimed that they did anything significant before they were captured, but because of their attitude since they were captured. So they've been, they've been on hunger strike, and they've railed against the injustice of their imprisonment, which may at times have involved, claiming that they're threatening the people imprisoning them. But it's that. It's nothing that they did. It's only how they've behaved in custody, which is absolutely ridiculous. These are,
Talk about the categories of the 40 men who are still left there. What kind of categories they've been put in by our government and who they are a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Well, I mean, the first thing is that five of the men who are held there were approved for release out of the prison by high-level government review processes under President Obama. He held one a review during his first year in office, which analyzed all the prisoners that he held and recommended that almost two-thirds of them should be released, and nearly all of those were throughout Obama's presidency. And then he set up a second review process towards the end of his presidency, which was a parole-type process, obviously with one big difference that, you could normally get a parole hearing after you've been convicted of something, and these men have been convicted of nothing. But they had to make the case that they could, would have peaceful lives after Guantanamo and that they would do no harm to the United States. And that led to Obama getting 36 other men out of the prison, low-level prisoners who didn't constitute any kind of serious threat. But throughout both of these processes, five men were left behind for a variety of reasons. And, there is nothing, there is no mechanism that can compel their release. Donald Trump doesn't want to release them, so therefore they are now Donald Trump's prisoners, his personal prisoners, and there's nothing that can be done. So just nine of the 40 men are caught up in the military commission trial system, which is the unfortunate alternative to federal courts in the prison, and it's a system that simply doesn't work. There have been numerous legal challenges which have overturned some of the very few convictions achieved in it, and they're caught in an endless kind of Groundhog Day spiral now, where the defense teams need to be able to demonstrate information about their clients being tortured for there to be any semblance of justice. But on the other side, the government's prosecutors are absolutely determined not to allow this to be used. And so it's just going round and round and incapable of delivering justice. And then the other men are the ones who... So there are 26 others. So this parole-type process, the periodic review boards that Obama set up, these are the men whose ongoing imprisonment without charge or trial was approved by the periodic review boards, which are panels of military and intelligence officers.
I notice a significant number of them seem to be from Yemen.
Yeah.
One, two,
absolutely.
Three, four, five. I'm just looking at the list in front of me. Yeah, quite a few seem to be.
These reviews are ongoing. So they have file reviews every 6 months where somebody shuffles a few bits of paper in an office somewhere. But every 3 years, and in reality it's often been more frequently than that, they are allowed to go to a secure room in Guantanamo and they're questioned and can present their case with legal support to a panel of military and intelligence officers who are on the mainland and make a case for their release. But no one has been approved for release since Trump took office, and it's, I think, very difficult not to conclude that that's because the political stance of the leadership has changed from Barack Obama
I think it's probably just hardened. It's hardened. I think Obama would have kept trying some, but I do think he would have been satisfied to leave some people in what I call indefinite detention, which I believe is illegal by all laws all over the world.
His entire plan for closing the prison involved, you know, the one that didn't happen would have involved closing that facility and then moving to the U.S. mainland.
In those horrible,
a number of men, some of whom would be tried and some of whom would continue to be held indefinitely.
Well, and there are special federal prisons that they're concentrating Muslim prisoners in, and they're very, very restrictive. They're very close to solitary confinement, 23 hours a day.
These are people who've been through some kind of legal process, Linda. So, you know, many of us working on Guantanamo were interested that if they came to the U.S. mainland, there really genuinely is not the precedent for holding people indefinitely without charge or trial.
Yes.
I mean, actually, Bush tried it. He had two U.S. citizens and a U.S. legal resident who he held as enemy combatants on the U.S. mainland and tortured horribly over a period of several years. When it came to being tested on that, he refused to try and defend it and move them into the federal court system. One of those men is Jose Padilla.
I remember his name. They basically addled his brain.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But, you know, it's significant that when pushed, he didn't try and defend holding people indefinitely without charge or trial on the U.S. mainland.
Yeah, and that is important to note. There's some kind of... Let me give the number out again in case we do have some people who would like to call in. It's 503-231-8187. Call in and give us your comments or your questions about Guantanamo. I noticed that they're going to some really bizarre lengths to have these trials. They have a prisoner that, at least the name here says, I couldn't find him on your list, but the name on this article in Miami Herald says Abd al-Hadi al-Iraqi, a 57-year-old inmate, and he's badly damaged spine, and they're basically making a giant movable cell that's a hospital cell for this man so that they can force him to testify, basically, because when he's in too much pain, he won't come out, and they're unwilling to send in one of the CERT teams, the teams that go in and roughly force you out of your cell, because it would, of course, harm him much more. Yeah, they'd probably end up killing him trying to do something like that. It said they've had him in the courtroom and tried to get his pain down enough so that he could talk, and they gave him pain meds, and then that made him fall asleep. So then they had him just sleep there in front of the jury, which also was disturbing to him. So they've now put a curtain up. But it seems like they're going to really wild extents for a trial that is not going to have any of the normal things. Like, there isn't going to be a defense attorney who can use, you know, all of the testimony of his client. There isn't going to be talk about what they actually get to do inside those trials.
Well, I mean, you know, they are, you know, the defense people are determined to you know, keep on postponing any possibility of an actual trial taking place until they can be guaranteed that their clients are going to get, are going to get a fair hearing. And so, you know, that's why these pretrial hearings go on forever. I mean, that's the case in al-Iraqi's situation. Is these are endless cycles of pretrial hearings. Getting to the actual trial date is a completely different matter. And what's actually been happening behind the scenes, Linda, which hasn't really been talked about that much, and I suppose it's really because Guantanamo has just disappeared off the radar so much, is there is some talk of trying to find a way in which people can come to plea deals so that there can be some resolution in some of these cases. And actually, the convening authority who's appointed to administratively oversee the military commissions was sacked last year by General Mattis when he was the defense secretary, because he'd been working on a plan for plea deals for some of these people facing the military commission trials, which Mattis didn't like. But he was, I think, just trying to resolve the impossibility of delivering justice through the trial system. And so I know also, you know, some lawyers and people looking at this are looking at the wider issue of of plea deals. I mean, not just for the high-value detainees.
I think anything that would make it possible to get people out sooner and, you know, say time served if I say I did this, even though it's not something they did.
Yeah, yeah, I know, exactly. I mean, it's, you know, it's a... And you can see that you know, the ways of trying to tackle this injustice change over the years. And it's shifting sands. It's a mutating injustice because, you know, it was made up when it began. The entire system is just full of holes. So
yeah, and they're ad-libbing, and they can't keep their judges in those military commissions because
the chief judge resigned last year.
Yeah, what a career stopper. I mean, it might be a career builder if Trump stays in position. It'll be a career, you know, a career stopper if it doesn't. I guess you have to decide what your actual morals are. I know that one project you have going on. There's a project to write to the Guantanamo prisoners, and I wondered if you would talk about that a little bit, because I know for myself, when I can't do anything about something, I tend to stop wanting to know about it because it's such a, you know, it's such a dissonance to not be able to do anything. But when there's an action that can be taken that I feel like might have some difference, and I thought this writing to the Guantanamo prisoners, can you talk about that project a little bit?
Yeah, sure. I mean, actually, I've been encouraging people, you know, once or twice a year via my website to write to the prisoners, and it was actually a couple of Muslim activist friends in Britain who first brought this notion to my attention, I think back in 2010, and they still do it amongst the people that they know. So I put the word out, and you know, and I explain what you have to do, which is that basically, you know, you have to kind of avoid getting political about anything. But you can send wishes to people to let them know that the outside world hasn't forgotten them, which I think, you know, certainly many years ago when prisoners were receiving notification from people in the outside world, it really meant a lot to them. You know, the difficulty after 17 years is that some of those people held in Guantanamo now really seem to be beyond hope, and I can really understand why that is. But I think it's still very much worthwhile for people who do want to do something to try and at least get a word from the outside world in there to say, you know, you are not forgotten.
And if you say you sort of steer away from political concerns, I mean, would I even be able to say, hi, I heard about you through this book, or I from this website, and I know that you can be written to, so I wanted to write to you.
Well, you know, I don't know, and the problem is that you know, none of us really know. I think that the only people who would be able to explain what has got through to the prisoners might be their lawyers, who might be able to meet them and talk to them about, you know, which things from the outside world did you receive. Because, you know, they don't necessarily let things through, and they don't necessarily not let things through, you know, because they have rules about it. It may be quite capricious.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think it's just worth making the effort, and all the suggestions over the years have been just not to, you know, not to say something like, you know, I'm writing to you because my government is imprisoning you horribly and has no right to do so, because, you know, that's the kind of thing where they might leap on it.
Mm-hmm.
But there's you know, you've picked this up, Linda, I think, from a recent post on my...
Yeah, I was going to say, people can get all this information from your website, which is andyworthington.co.uk.
And again, like many things, Linda, I noticed that it was, you know, very, very popular, that post this year, much more so than it has been in previous years.
Well, that is encouraging. It's encouraging to be able to have some ways to sort of gauge that as well, because, like I said, everything is so crazy all the time here now.
Yeah.
That and in your own country, yesterday was a very interesting day in your country. So.
Oh, don't. We haven't got time to get
into that. No, we won't. We won't even. We won't even say the B word, or the leader that you've got. You know, I noticed one other thing. I don't know, you posted this article as well, and it's called The Unending Punishment of Former Guantanamo Prisoner Omar Khadr. And, you know, I covered Omar Khadr quite a bit. There was a book written about him, and I interviewed the author, and I spoke with his attorney several times. I covered his case, and he was a 15-year-old who was very gravely wounded in a firefight with U.S. soldiers, and was first taken to a prison in Afghanistan, I believe, where he was not treated well and where his wounds got worse. He was only 15 years old. There are protocols for how that is supposed to happen in a war setting. They were not taken,
yeah.
And he ended up in Guantanamo. He has some permanent injuries from the original injuries, but he was released a few years ago to Canada. He had two more years in his sentence to do at Canada. They held him to the very length of they could in prison, and then when he got out, they're still making restrictions on him so that he... He's now past the longest sentence he was supposed to have for.
Yeah, I mean, that's a key thing, I think.
He should be free, literally.
The 8-year sentence that he got in exchange for the plea deal, in which he said he'd thrown a grenade that killed a U.S. soldier, which, you know, he said that to get out of Guantanamo, not because it was true, it was his only way out. But then he then was given an 8-year sentence, and that came to an end in the fall. So it should mean. As it should do for anyone who reaches the end of any sentence, that there are no longer restrictions on them, and yet they're still stopping him, I think, from speaking in an unsupervised manner with his sister, who, you know, has a history of having made statements supporting Al Qaeda.
Yeah, I've read her statements in the past.
And they won't let him travel internationally. But you know, this is actually, it touches on a bigger issue, Linda, which is something I hope to look at this year, which is the rights, or rather the complete lack of them, or the arbitrary and capricious nature of the rights relating to former Guantanamo prisoners. So, in other words, everybody who has been held at Guantanamo remains, you know, tainted by the place. And, you know, governments around the world continue to treat them as though they don't have the fundamental rights that the rest of us can take for granted, that they can be, you know, monitored and have all kinds of impingements on their personal liberty. The United States never produced a kind of rule book about enemy combatants, and I think that they need an international body, perhaps the United Nations, to actually do some studying and focus on this particular issue, because around the world what we're seeing is people who are being treated in much more seriously intrusive ways than Omar Khadr is, because they had formerly been in Guantanamo but had never been convicted of anything.
And yes, so there, so and some have been released to countries that have nothing to do with their own country, and they're lonely, and they, you know, I mean,
yeah.
You know, they don't have a life that they're being able to make come forward.
Well, there's also been, you know, this is, last year was very shocking in another way relating to former prisoners, Linda, because under Obama, there was a position established at the State Department called the Envoy, the Office of the Envoy for Guantanamo Closure. Now, as soon as Trump got in, he went, well, I'm not closing it, so he closed the office. Now, it didn't just arrange for the resettlement of prisoners in countries. It also monitored prisoners after release. And I actually think that the Republicans and those people who are very concerned with national security issues ought to be alarmed that there is literally no one in the United States government that anyone anywhere can talk to about issues relating to former prisoners. And what happened last year, very sadly, was that, tragically, two Libyan men who had been released from Guantanamo to Senegal in West Africa, on the understanding that they would be able to stay there, were sent back to Libya. Now, one of these men had had enough of being in Senegal and separated from his family, but the other man absolutely did not want to be sent back there and would not have left Guantanamo if he'd known that after 2 years of freedom, he would be sent back to Libya. And both men promptly disappeared into prisons run by notorious militias.
Yeah, those prisons are pretty notorious.
And our fear is that they were killed. You know, and this is on Donald Trump. There was no one who could do anything about it. No one.
Well, and you know, this strange, in one way, what's strange about it is there's an incompetency level that's so high in the Trump administration that, you know, it could be just as simple as no one even thought of getting rid of, no one was even there to say, hey, wait, getting rid of the envoy position is a little bit of a problem. And just like the fact that in the way that they've taken children from from their families on the southern border. They, you know, anybody who's ever done anything in social work knows that you could sit down and take those names, you know, you could get the right information, you could track where people are going pretty much on a yellow pad. You know, you, it's not impossible to keep the information that was needed when you're doing this kind of thing, and they really didn't. And I think that there's I think there's like a broken competency throughout the whole federal government. Because he's refusing to hire people as people leave. He's refusing to staff positions. And so I think he's happy about the whole government falling apart, but I think the ramifications are much more and much different than he knows. I think, of course,
absolutely, Linda, and you know, and I don't think that he's capable of that kind of detailed thinking, which is, you know, a key reason why it's happening. But you're right. I mean, it, you know, the Guantanamo envoy is just one of many positions in many departments, you know, throughout the government where there are holds where there used to be a function that is required, but that is no longer happening. It's a very poor performance.
No kidding. Well, you know, he hasn't ever really done well in business either, unless someone bails him out. So that's what it turns out. Let me tell the listeners what's going to be coming up here on KBOO the rest of this morning. It at 8, well, no, that's already passed. At 9, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. And then at 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fagren welcomes journalist Max Blumenthal to discuss the Integrity Initiative, a covert British military smear campaign making its way into the U.S. Do you know about that, the Integrity Initiative?
No, I don't. I haven't heard of that.
Well, we will have to, I'll have to send you a link to Per's story when it's done. And then you can find out.
Thank you.
At 10, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on Between the Covers, David Naiman spends the hour with author Jeffrey Yang talking about his latest book, Hey Marfa. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on the bright red donate button. And I want to thank all of you listeners for being supporters. Many of you are supporters, and we really appreciate that. If you want to get a question or a comment in, please really do that. I know there's some of you out there that even fast with the prisoners. That's another project that the Witness Against Torture did. Would you like to talk about that, Andy?
What, the fasting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's what, you know, it's what they do every year. And you know, and while doing that, then they, you know, stage all kinds of interventions and actions across Washington, D.C., designed to highlight the plight of the prisoners. So, you know, they will occupy government buildings and museums, and people will be arrested. And they're doing all of this while, you know, while fasting, which I'm full of admiration for them.
I am too. I get so grumpy just to fast for a blood test. Oh my goodness.
Right. Well, I mean, I did it for one day for Shakarama, the last British resident in Guantanamo, who, you know, I campaigned a lot for, and who was released in 2015. And just before he was released, we had a program of, he'd gone on a fast, you know, to kind of make sure that President Obama stuck to his word and released him, and people around the world, you know, joined in. So I did a day, and I found it extremely difficult.
Yeah, I get cranky right away. I don't know if I could make it 2 or 3 days if the crankiness would go away. But boy, I'm not somebody anyone would want to be around when I'm fasting.
I think maybe you enter into a place, but I think, you know, where it becomes easier. But, you know, I'm full of admiration for them, and these are really, you know, wonderful people.
Well, and I think the thing that they're doing that is important is they're doing something real in the sense that it's physical.
Yeah.
That is also clearly in solidarity with what's happening to the prisoners that are still hunger fasting in the prison. Do we know how many are?
No, because, you know, they don't release any figures anymore. So the only way that we can find out is when lawyers for the prisoners come back to the public with reports. So, you know, I'm pretty sure that a handful of prisoners are on a hunger strike. You know, one thing that happened under Obama during the time that this parole-type process, the periodic review boards, was happening was that, you know, it was made apparent that if you wanted the review panel to look on your case favorably, then you really shouldn't be hunger striking, because because you were supposed to be showing a willingness to cooperate with the authorities. And I think it's fair to say that a few prisoners who had been on hunger strike did come off their hunger strike and did present their case to the review boards and were approved for release. But of course, some of the men, have not ended up approved for release and are now feeling much more than ever that they're stuck in this prison forever. So it may be more than a handful, Linda. We just don't have the figures. I mean, what's interesting is that in 2013, when the prisoners were previously in despair because they saw no end to their imprisonment, because what had happened at that point was that Congress had tried to obstruct and prevent Barack Obama from releasing prisoners, and he hadn't really done much to challenge Congress. So there was a period of 2¾ years when only 5 men were released from the prison, and that was because of either things to do with the military commissions or with court-ordered releases. He did nothing that came from him. And the prisoners were so in despair at the end of this that they embarked on a prison-wide hunger strike. And throughout 2013, the military reported how many people were on the hunger strike. And then towards the end of 2013, when they realized that none of this was helping their case for defending the existence of Guantanamo, they simply stopped reporting the numbers of prisoners on hunger strike, and they've never reported them since.
They called the hunger strikes, sort of another way of attacking the system. This was an aggressive act on their part.
They've always had the most unfortunate choice of words, which, about things that have happened. I mean, when 3 men allegedly committed suicide in June 2006, and there are very serious reasons for doubting that narrative.
Oh, yes.
But when that story came out, the commander of the prison called it an act of asymmetrical warfare. The notion that committing suicide...
Asymmetrical
is an act of warfare,
that's the phrase they used, wasn't it? Asymmetrical warfare.
Yeah, I mean, how horrible is that?
Oh, it sounds very bad it's almost the last weapon you have is to either to remain silent and to hunger strike. You're not in a power position, and so you're bound to have to do something.
It absolutely is that you have no power over any other aspect of your life, so you use the power you have over your own body. I mean, that's very fundamentally what hunger striking is. Yeah.
I wanted to tie the camps that are being built by the military and being filled in by our military on our southern border. And also, the last time I spoke to you, I remember reading an article by Carol Rosenberg at the Miami Herald that they were building they had plans for building a 13,000 people migration emergency camp on Guantanamo. I don't know. I looked. I didn't see anything more about that or how far any of the building is going, but it makes me think of, one, this car and how he treated the Haitians. And
yes.
There could be a migration emergency if a weather emergency happened in those countries.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the Caribbean.
Given Guantanamo's history, it really, and given the terrible state of the world now and the many, many reasons why why there might be a kind of migrant crisis, then everything does point to Guantanamo as a place that they've used before and that they could use again.
Well, in this Attorney General prospectus, the guy who's wanting to be Attorney General, he was arguing for indefinite detention, basically that there's no law that says that there has to be an end to detention for migrants.
No,
Supreme Court has tended to say, yeah, there doesn't have to be, there's nothing that says there has to be an end date known. It makes the whole thing scarier. I have not seen good photos of the camps along the southern border, but I know that they're still housing families in them, and they look like cages. They're basically white plastic over cages.
Yes. Absolutely. And I mean, and we have the same... problems in Britain, where I think we're the only nation in Europe that doesn't have a finite length of time that people in immigration centers facing deportation can be held. So, in other words, there's a time limit on that in every country in Europe apart from Britain. And, you know, any time that people are being held in open-ended imprisonment, it can have, you know, it can have very, very serious effects on their mental health.
And when they're being put there by category, you are a, you know,
yeah,
illegal this or whatever coming here, that those categories can stick with them even though they don't have anything to do with them. You know, maybe the better category would be concerned mother or
right
you know, or something like that, or brother seeking his family already in America. You know, their categories right. would be entirely different. But I am concerned about the continued bringing in of this type of person into the Trump administration. He doesn't sound to be able to hold on to anybody too long, but he also seems to be able to ferret out the sort of worst of the worst, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And so,
but, you know,
ooh, that was an interesting sound.
The fact is, Linda, that, sorry, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Strange beeping noise.
Yeah.
The fact is that, you know, the existence of Guantanamo, where indefinite imprisonment without charge or trial has been happening for 17 years, bleeds into every other aspect of how detention is perceived. So, you know, it normalizes things relating to migrants, but there is this facility. And it's really one of the reasons why people do need to remain concerned about Guantanamo if they are concerned about the proper pursuit of justice and the rule of law. Because those cells in Guantanamo where those particular Muslim prisoners are held because of the particular legislation that was passed after 9/11 could be, you know, another group of people could theoretically be targeted by Donald Trump or by any future president, to be honest, as, you know, a new enemy to be imprisoned at Guantanamo. While it remains open, while that notion of indefinite imprisonment without charge or trial has not been repudiated, that's a, you know, it's a very real fear, and it ought to concern all decent American people that this is still happening in their name.
Yes, I completely agree with you on that. It looks like we do have a caller. Barr?
Yes, it is.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Oh, good. Oh, yes. Good morning. Hi, Andy. Thanks for checking in with us and bringing us up to speed. I spoke to you, I think, last time you were on, but
right, okay.
I didn't want you to think that Portland doesn't care. I don't.
No,
there's Portland, a lot of people listening.
Portland wasn't high up on my list of places where I thought people didn't care, it must be said. I think that people in Portland do care.
Well, I don't have anything terribly strong to say. I so much appreciate your work. You're keeping us informed. I think Linda is correct.
Well, thank you very much for your concern. That's the main thing, really. The more people care, the better.
Well, I think Linda is right that the Trump administration seems to be literally scraping the bottom of the barrel for the worst of the worst, and then put them to work until they're discovered, and then cast them out and find somebody else.
Yes.
And this is another wonderful example of that. I hope that there's going to be some opposition to him going forward, but we'll have to wait and see.
I'm noticing at the moment that obviously he's, you know, engaged in this government shutdown, which is causing, you know, a lot of distress to a lot of people, and he clearly seems not to care, as is so often the case. And I'm hoping that, you know, that it's damaging him in some way. Because it shows kind of contempt he actually has for the ordinary American people, it seems to me.
Yes, and he waves those around as if they're actually supporting him.
Right.
You know, no one's asked them, and they're going down the financial drain because there's no getting back. You know, the way that the situation is in this country with rental availability and mortgages and all of those things, once you get behind, it's almost impossible without some extra influx of funds to catch up. You know, just to stay even is such a task.
Barr,
that's another argument.
Barr, yesterday on the radio, I heard different people talking, and they were in fairly high professions, and yet they were talking about having to take out loans. And I think we've heard often enough that in America, most people don't even have a full paycheck in savings to to use if they did have a catastrophe. And I think we're seeing that play out by the people in all the different what might be called financial status, even people from the contract workers who are getting paid the lowest to even immigration judges are facing very serious financial strife from not having one or two paychecks. That's an indictment of our whole nation.
Yeah,
agreed.
Yeah.
And the contract wages will not be paid to people that have not been at work. So if you're a contractor, there's no back pay coming for you.
Yep. Yeah.
It's I'll catch the rest of this off the air. I want to thank you again.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling
in. All right,
thanks
again for your interest. Thanks.
We're sure there's at least one or two other people out there in the audience, but that doesn't mean you want to call in. You've got about 1 minute to do it. It's 503-231-8187. I really appreciate talking with you, Donald. I think, Donald. I swear, if that's Freudian, I don't know which way. Because you are so unlike
my
him.
My head has just melted, Linda.
Yes, it should have. Well, I want to thank you for all the work you do ongoingly on behalf of the people at Guantanamo and the people who have already left Guantanamo. And what our audience might not know without going to your website is that you do a lot of work on contemporary issues going on in your country, including the Council Flat issues, the you know,
my benighted country as well, Linda. Yeah,
yeah, and yeah, and the country that, like you and I and many people, we love where we live. We just hate the governmental structure doing it.
You know, we both sides of the Atlantic. We genuinely, I think, we do need to. All of us who care to be working constantly on how to get more of us together to resist the kind of stuff that they intend to do to us, because these are not, our leaders are not people who are on our side. They really aren't.
Yeah, they really aren't. Hey, we've got one more caller. Let's let him on. Jeff, you're on.
Well, good morning. Thank you for the show. It's just a really important issue, I think, and I really appreciate it being aired. The one question that you didn't address is, I think, is how in the world we have the right to be in Guantanamo in the first place.
Yeah. Well, no, it's a good question, and it was a payment for American help in the Cubans' war against the Spanish at the end of the 19th century. And Guantanamo, the bay, which is Cuba's lovely easternmost bay, was given to the U.S. as a coaling station, and then in the decades that followed, a leasing situation was set up with the Cuban government, which means that America can stay in Guantanamo until both sides agree to break the lease. So, you know, the Americans don't want to break the lease, so it goes on forever. A really kind of odd arrangement, but one that has enabled the U.S. to stay in this corner of Cuba for all these years. It's a good point, and it's, you know, I hope some people who didn't know will find out that that's the way that America has you know, got to hold on to this corner of Cuba.
In perpetuity?
Yeah, in perpetuity is the way they're going to do it. And it was, you know, it was taken at the end the sword of imperialism, basically. We have that funny thing beeping in, and it is about time to go. I do want to play Fighting Injustice, which is one of Andy Worthington's songs from Four Fathers, the band that he works with that does protest writing. And I want to thank you again, Andy Worthington. .co.uk is your website, and I want people to go there, because if you want to write to the people who are still in Guantanamo or take any action around it, there are choices and also just lots of good information. Thanks again, Andy.
Thank you, Linda. Great to talk to you as always.
Here comes your song.
Despite all the victories that were fought for, are turned into pimps and whores. Our NHS is being choked, and there are no jobs for the young in this.
Hey, it's 8:59. This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30 on Fight the Empire, Per Fogering welcomes journalist Max Blumenthal to discuss the Integrity Initiative. This is a covert British military smear campaign making its way into the United States. At 10, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on Between the Covers, David Naiman spends the hour with author Jeffrey Yang talking about his latest book, Hey Marfa. And all of these KBOO programs are made possible by you, by becoming a KBOO member. Go to kboo.fm. Click on Donate. Teresa Mitchell is next with Press Watch.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the counter rally for reproductive justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. Well, Mike Pence is going around